Have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? We recently saw a video he made and it was shocking. He's in his 80s and still kicking butt, working out, staying active, and even has plenty of energy left over for his grandkids. He did this by just making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife tried too, and she says she feels 10 years younger. Her body looks leaner and she has energy all day. With the stress of everyday life, on top of the toll all the world's terrible news takes on us, it's more important than ever to stay healthy. My Morning Kick is the way to do it. Chuck made a video that explains everything. Make sure you watch it by going to mymorningkick.com/useful. It'll change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/useful. You won't believe how simple it is.
Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm a prophet in the new novel, American Prophet. I prophesied a natural disaster, a pandemic, and that crazy election. Now there are conspiracies about me. A dude is shooting at me, and the president is threatening me. My story is on Amazon, Audible, and Apple Books. Check it out. Just look for American Prophet by Jeff Fulmer. That's American Prophet by Jeff Fulmer.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Halper.
I'm the second host, Aaron Matte. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Another crazy week in the world to discuss and lament. As always, our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there, support the show, keep it going. As a bonus, get bonus content.
An extended interview every week and Thursday Throwdown, which is your midweek dose of media madness. So let's start with the four basic food groups, shall we? Democrats suck, Republicans suck. Isn't that weird? Isn't that terrible? What do we got for Democrats?
Well, for Democrats suck, we're going to throw in a cameo appearance for Republicans suck, because when it comes to Israel's mass murder campaign in Gaza, Democrats and Republicans equally suck. They suck together. And what a beautiful display of bipartisan unity and suckage right here.
BPS.
BPS. And this clip bipartisan from suckage. And this clip from Mitt Romney, a Republican senator, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken. And watch how they come together to agree that they're responsible for doing Israel's PR, and that the reason why the PR... Well, anyway, I'll let them explain it for you.
Yeah,
here's Mitt Romney and Antony Blinken.
Why has the PR been so awful? I know that's not your area of expertise, but you have to have some thoughts on that, which is, I mean, as you've said, why has Hamas disappeared in terms of public perception? An offer is on the table to have a ceasefire, and yet the world is screaming about Israel. It's like, why aren't they screaming about Hamas? Accept the ceasefire, bring home the hostages. Instead, it's all the other way around. Typically, the Israelis are good at PR. What's happened here? How have they and we been so ineffective at communicating the realities there? And
we are on an intravenous feed of information with new impulses, inputs every millisecond. And of course, the way this has played out on social media has dominated the narrative. And you have a social media ecosystem environment in which context, history, facts get lost, and the emotion, the impact of images dominates. And we can't discount that. But I think it also has a very, very, very challenging effect on the narrative.
Yeah, a small parenthetical point, which is some wonder why there was such overwhelming support for us to shut down potentially TikTok or other entities of that nature. If you look at the postings on TikTok and the number of mentions of Palestinians relative to other social media sites, it's overwhelmingly so among TikTok broadcast. So I'd note that's of real interest, and the president will get the chance to make action in that regard.
I mean, there's so much here. First of all, Antony Blinken is sitting there nodding along and agreeing with Mitt Romney as he says, why are we doing a bad job on Israel's PR? Presuming that it's our job to do Israel's PR. And like Blinken doesn't have the self-awareness to be like, at least pretend that he's supposed to be neutral as a diplomat. That's his job, right? I think he forgets that a lot. His job is supposed to be as a diplomat, and a diplomat requires you to be at a minimum neutral and not doing the PR of a foreign state. But Blinken, he's so bankrupt morally that it doesn't even clue into him that he should maybe offer a correction and a difference with Romney. And then he talks about how social media lacks the context. What he means is social media lacks the propaganda spin that he can rely right. on from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other places, or Fox News, because they're all in lockstep when it comes to Israel. And then Mitt Romney admits, yes, this is why we're banning TikTok, is because we can't control it, and they dare mention Palestinians more than other places. So therefore, they must be shut down. And Blinken just said they're nodding.
Just I mean, it's almost refreshing, honestly, how honest they are about it. They do us a big favor in some ways.
It's very refreshing. And that's why it's great to see them come together, because the Republicans are generally the more honest ones. They don't hide their bigotry and their sadism as much as, you know, some Democrats do. Democrats are better trained at hiding it. But Blinken, sitting next to Romney, doesn't have the fortitude to try to pretend as if he's different. He's just such a sycophant. He just nods along because he agrees with Romney. And he agrees with the bigotry and the authoritarianism of wanting to shut down TikTok because it dares recognize the realities of Palestinians.
Right. Really, you really can't make it up. They just make it so plain. Again, it's actually refreshing. So we want to thank these gents for making our job so easy in a way.
They should host a show called Useful Idiots. You know,
yeah, they should.
You know, every week because really they're doing a much better job exposing themselves than even we are. So
right,
Nancy Blinken, Mitt Romney host a podcast. Do it.
No, don't put us out of business, guys. Please don't. So for Republicans Suck, let's take a look at how Congressman Mike Collins, a Republican of Georgia, responded to a protest at Mississippi University. First, let's take a look at the footage of the protest at the university. Then we'll take a look at what he said about it. For people who are just listening and not watching, what we see there is an African-American woman who is standing there, and we see a group of white people. The white people are counter-protesters. They are Zionist, pro-Zionist counter-protesters. And you see one of these white bros, he's a frat brother, making monkey sounds, doing a just classic racist move where he's making monkey noises and gestures to mock an African-American woman. I mean, it's just disgusting. So that's disgusting in itself. But on top of that, you have Republican Congressman Mike Collins of Georgia tweeting out Ole Miss taking care of business.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
Ole Miss acting like Ole Miss, like Jim Crow. Yeah,
exactly.
God,
it's so disgusting. It's. I mean, you kind of can't make it up, and it's still up there. His tweet is still up there. You'd think that he would have deleted it, but no, it's still up there. The nice thing is that guy doing that monkey movement has been. I mean, it's nowhere near the punishment he deserves, but he's been kicked out of his fraternity. Yeah.
Well, honestly, that's probably good for him in the long run. He should be punished with more than that, I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Hopefully that's just the beginning of a long line of punishments that he has to face.
Yeah.
But I want to give you another example of Republican Suck. Let's take a look at how Congressman Brian Mast of Michigan responded to Code Pink asking him about the fact that Hamas had agreed to a ceasefire deal.
Now that Hamas has agreed to a ceasefire, do you think Israel should agree?
I think Israel should go in there and kick the shit out of them. Just absolutely destroy them, their infrastructure, level anything that they touch. Clear enough?
Congressman, the world is calling for a ceasefire. You used to say Hamas won't agree to a ceasefire. Hamas had just agreed. It was a proposal put forward by Egypt, Qatar. You know, CIA Director William Burns has been there negotiating.
You know what? If there's an American help or somebody else being helped, there should be every expectation that Americans come and kill them as well. If there's an American being helped, we should go kill the people that are holding them.
Why are you so hateful?
It's not hateful.
It is, because my people are Palestinian. You're killing my people with our tax dollars. And you saying that
those
everything
should associate themselves with terrorists. They shouldn't vote terrorists into office.
We keep
like
saying
Hamas.
To you, the
Israel is the terrorist.
Palestinian Islamic
Israel is the terrorist.
The Martyrs Brigade, Lions Den, Fatah, all those terrorist organizations.
We say to you every single time, the majority of people are children. They are the ones that are bearing the brunt.
Just because you say it doesn't make it true, which is what you constantly.
That it's children?
Let me say this very clearly. I literally don't believe a word that you say.
Well, I think that you are a heartless, soulless, cruel man. And today is Holocaust Remembrance Day.
I'll take that as a compliment.
My people, Jewish people. And I am saying, as a Jew, we said never again, and it's happening now.
You are so hateful and disgusting. It's a shame. You are a crime against humanity.
So I like the way he's so openly hateful. Also, I like the way he denies facts. He doesn't believe that the majority of the people being hurt are children. He doesn't believe that half of the population of Gaza are children and that children are especially vulnerable in times of war. I don't know what there is to say, except he's a disgusting human being. If he cares about saving the lives of Americans, which he does, he's very open about not caring about Palestinians. But if he did care, then he, of course, would be happy about a ceasefire. He would want a ceasefire because that would ensure the release of Americans as opposed to continuing the assault, which endangers the hostages.
If I were one of these noble members of Code Pink who has to deal with these people every single day, I mean, imagine having to come across that face to face on a daily basis, the inhumanity of people like that.
Yeah.
And then you think about how there are elected representatives. And, you know, what he's saying, he's not like a fringe. He represents the consensus of the Republicans for sure, and many Democrats as well. Yeah. When it comes to Gaza. Imagine having to just come face to face with that every single day. It's
so hateful.
It's hard enough to watch it on a screen.
Right. Imagine being face to face with it. Yeah, it's true that is one of the differences. I mean, it's just a rhetorical difference. They obviously support the same policy in terms of enabling Israel. But it is true that you hear Republicans more openly say that they voted them in, so they deserve this, which is, of course, an Israeli talking point, which is totally morally reprehensible. But also doesn't really, even if you say that, and the logic of that is disgusting, but even if that were true, obviously a majority of the people didn't vote for Hamas by virtue of the fact that half of them are children. Not every single person voted for Hamas then, and half of them weren't voting age. I mean, not half, and a significant amount weren't voting age. I mean, it's a ridiculous argument anyway, but I'm just responding to their, even by their twisted logic of you deserve to be murdered because you voted for people we don't like. Even that doesn't work. So what do we have for Isn't That Weird?
For Isn't That Weird, we're going to turn to Megyn Kelly, the former Fox News host who now hosts a podcast. Megyn Kelly weighed in recently on the Gaza solidarity encampments at colleges. And this was her take.
And by the way, why are they so unattractive? I really legitimately want to know, why are all the protesters so homely? I don't think they're unconnected. I'm not going to lie. I think attractive, smart people are not drawn to this nonsense. They're living their lives being successful. It's the unattractive and or dumb people who feel the need to do this to feel like they matter. Sorry, hard.
But this is a grown adult. This is a grown adult who has a following, is, you know, weighs in on political topics, and she's judging people based on her perception of their attractiveness, as if this is like, I don't know, people do that in grade school still, or high school. I think by high school, people grow out of that. What can you even say to that? Like, listening to that clip, I just like, what kind of a demented mind comes up with stuff like this? Like, because what she's basically saying is she's seeing brave young people protesting a genocide, and she's deciding to dismiss them all as unattractive. I just don't understand what kind of a mind comes up with that. Very troubled mind.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's a good sign because it shows how desperate these people are. They can't actually criticize what protesters are doing on their merits because they're protesting genocide. So that it's useful in that way, right? Because it reveals their despair. But it's also useful because it reveals, like you were saying, Aaron, just such a craven, warped sense of the world. Like they are actually harming their side by showing the way that they think.
It also raises an interesting question about like what constitutes attractiveness. Like,
of course, right.
Somebody saying stuff like that is the most, I can't think of anything more vile and more off-putting and how like just someone like that, I don't want to be anywhere near. And they can only see the world based on their like, just to call her a vain, it's like beyond vain because what she's really responding to is just people with a moral conscience, which she finds unattractive.
Right.
So if you find a moral conscience unattractive, then what does that make you? It's just like, you know, appropriately, she's wearing red, which is the color of the devil. And that's the energy I'm picking up here. Just this is devil stuff right there. It's devil energy.
I honestly think that that may be, I'm not even kidding. I think that may be like her logo. It may be a devil. Devil May Care Media is her media corporation. If you go, you can sign up for Megyn Kelly's new weekly email at Devil May Care Media.
Well, this is very suspicious, and we might be on the verge of breaking the media scandal of the year. That yes, folks, Megyn Kelly is the devil.
Yeah, she's the devil. Yeah,
it's not
us making it up. It's in her own logo.
We generally do not delve into supernatural issues here on Useful Idiots. We're very sober, fact-based, you know, meat and potatoes kind of show. But
yes,
we've seen enough here, I think, that supports the conclusion that Megyn Kelly really is indeed the devil. The unhinged rhetoric, the just complete, like, demonic way of looking at the world, the red outfit, okay, and it's in the name of her production company.
Yeah.
So, bam.
Bam. She is a bit obsessed with appearances. Remember, she was very upset when people were suggesting that Santa was not white.
Yeah, she assured the kids watching at home that Santa is white.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. That was one of the most racist segments or comments ever on TV. And then she followed up again. Remember when she like briefly got her own talk show? And she was complaining that you can't wear blackface anymore for Halloween or something like that.
Right.
God. Well, you heard it here first. This is a Useful Idiots exclusive. Megyn Kelly very well might be the devil.
Might be the devil, yeah.
Yeah.
So for Isn't That Terrible, let's take a look at Piers Morgan, where we had a debate between Abby Martin, friend of show and great journalist Abby Martin, and Mossab Hassan Youssef, who is the son of Sheikh Hassan Youssef, a co-founder of Hamas. He defected to Israel. Then he became an undercover agent for Israel Shin Bet, and now he lives in the United States.
We see Israel has committed, in fact, some of the most heinous war crimes in modern history, Piers. And as we're seeing the invasion now of Rafah, cutting off the last vestige of escape for Palestinians, the last vestige of aid delivery, 1.3 million Palestinians, including 600,000 children, with nowhere left to go. This is what Palestinians were told was a safe corridor. That is why they all fled to Rafah. Rafah has been bombarded for the last several weeks, killing dozens of people every day. So I think at this point, 6 months into a genocide, to be deliberating whether or not Israel should continue with this onslaught, this military operation that will result in mass slaughter to continue their ethnic cleansing of Gaza is frankly absurd, patently so, considering what we've seen them do just in the last several weeks, Piers. Evidence of summary executions of doctors, evidence of mass graves, hundreds of bodies bound, dozens of men, women, and children bound, evidence, according to the UN, of Palestinians buried alive, using drones to lure out Palestinians with sounds of crying children so they could be shot and killed. I mean, this is unparalleled in modern history, actually. And the devastation that's occurred in the Gaza Strip, according to the UN, will take 80 years to rebuild without conditions. So at this point, Israel needs to be stopped before they continue this horrific onslaught, Piers.
So those are the very rationally and calmly made points by Abby Martin that are urgent, but she makes them in a very rational way. Now let's take a look at how her debate partner, Massab Hassan Youssef, responded.
Well, you know, this is Abby's desperate attempt to discredit me. I am a man of the field. I fought against Hamas as part of intelligence, legitimate intelligence organization, against savage group that were targeting civilians in suicide bombing attacks, waves of suicide bombing attacks that they killed people indiscriminately. So Abby today want me for some reason to apologize for saving human life, because my truth challenges her convenient truth. Abby does not have the authority. She's just a self-appointed low-grade journalist. How can you be a journalist and you call this a genocide, ethnic cleansing? And she just keep repeating ethnic cleansing, genocide, colonialism, etc. None of it is real, including Palestine. It's all in your head. None of it is existential. Palestine was never born. How can you free it? It was never there. It's just a colonial entity. And some people choose to make it into a national identity. And this parrot has been just repeating Hamas propaganda. Marwan Barghouti, that she's talking about him, she never met him. I knew Marwan before he got to power. He's a criminal. He killed five people. He has blood on his hands. He cheated on his wife. He has a secret son that he never revealed it to the public. Of course, I can criticize him, and I can criticize all the criminals that I know personally. She's been there only for a visit, and maybe she had some falafel sandwich, you know, and she really was blown away of the Palestinian experience. There is no such a thing as Palestine. It's about time to retire, find a different job. You're not a journalist. You don't qualify even to be a mother.
Wow.
So there you have it. That's his response to Abby Martin's very good analysis. His response is that she doesn't qualify to be a journalist or even a mother. Kind of reminds me of the Megyn Kelly thing, where these people are so desperate to defend their side and they have so few tools because they're so clearly in the wrong that they have to resort to grade school disses.
And Abby went on to give a very poised response to that stupid insult from him. Right. You know, he, I mean, this is a case where, again, I think psychoanalyzing is appropriate. He's the son of a former Hamas leader. He's worked literally for Israel. He's gotten Palestinians imprisoned, as Abby pointed out. He's taking part in the occupation and suppression and mass murder of his own people. What do you say about someone like that? Whatever his relationship with his father was,
it turned out
something really dark. It's hard to watch.
Well, isn't that terrible? And those are your four basic food groups. We are so excited to be joined by Saeed Erekat. He's Washington Bureau Chief for Al-Quds Daily, a newspaper, a Palestinian Arabic language daily newspaper based in Jerusalem. He's also an adjunct professor at American University.
And Saeed is a veteran reporter in Washington who can be seen daily asking tough questions of State Department spokespeople and making them squirm, because he's a rare journalist in Washington actually doing journalism. So let's hear from Saeed Erekat about doing journalism in Washington, a rare thing, and what's happening in Gaza.
Welcome, Saeed Erekat.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks so much for joining. I wanted to know how Israel's shuttering of Al Jazeera is affecting your reporting here in the United States.
Well, you know, I am a correspondent for Al-Quds Daily newspaper. We've always, it's a newspaper that's been around for a very, very long time. It has correspondents everywhere in Gaza. It has correspondents everywhere in occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, even correspondents, of course, in Israel, you know. So our reporting, as it is conducted, it really is not affected a great deal. But of course, you know, what happens elsewhere. I mean, you know, I am also a frequent guest on Al Jazeera. I have maybe like a daily thing to do it late in the evening. early in the morning, Jerusalem time. So, yes, of course it gets affected because many, oftentimes I am paired with my colleagues from Al Jazeera, whether Elias Karam and others and so on, who are Israeli citizens. And that definitely affects what is happening in terms of conveying what's going on as it is happening in real time, or gavel to gavel, as they were. That definitely gets interrupted.
How safe are your correspondents who are on the ground?
Well, our correspondents, we already lost three, you know, so they're not safe. They're just as safe as anybody else. There are 140 Palestinian journalists that have been killed since October 7th. And many have been injured. They don't get talked about because they are either freelancers or they are, you know, they have some sort of a podcast or a web thing and so on. So these are not even counted as journalists. But we're talking about correspondents for the major news outlets worldwide. I mean, it's not only Palestinian outlets, but let's say for AP, Reuters, for many others, AFP, you know, a lot of outlets have lost their correspondents in Gaza.
You have a piece on Al-Quds about the United States saying that it doesn't consider the invasion of Rafah to be a significant invasion. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I mean, yesterday we asked the State Department spokesman, and the same thing was asked to John Kirby at the White House. And they kept insisting that this is really a very limited operation, which means that we have okayed it. You know, I mean, that's exactly what it means. It means that, you know, and I asked a question, and which I really cite in my news, in my article. I asked him, so what if Israel, if it's okay for you that Israel conducts a limited operation, so what if they keep conducting limited operations every day? I mean, they do it from here and they do it from there. Does this collectively add up to a major operation? And he said, well, you know, that's in theory and so on. I went into, you know, just another kind of a explanation. But that is really the position. I mean, this operation would not have taken place without Biden's approval. So he definitely approved it when he was on the phone with Netanyahu on Monday, because that's when it really happened. So it just flies in the face of what they were claiming all along. They kept telling us that any operation is considered a red line. Well, obviously, it's not a red line. So they keep saying this has not crossed the red line, and it just shows the hypocrisy and the complicity, really, in this onslaught on the Palestinians.
And Hamas, of course, agreed to release the hostages, and then Israel decided not to agree to a ceasefire and instead invaded Rafah. But a lot of journalists are saying that they didn't actually agree to releasing the hostages. Can you kind of demystify this for us?
It's not a mystery. It's very clear. Hamas, they respond. Look, you know, last week the U.S. kept saying, and in fact, they kept telling us in the State Department that the ball is in Hamas's court. The ball is in Hamas's court. We have given a generous offer. I mean, they use the word generous over and over and over again. And they say it's in their court. So Hamas said, you know, we're studying it. And sure enough, they came back and they say, that's fine with us. We agree to it. You know, they may have, and even the American officials, the first response was, you know, this is actually pretty much what we submitted. You know, maybe they are tweaked with some a word here and a word there, but it does not change in any way the substance of the agreement. So anyone that tells you that Hamas did not agree, as Matthew Miller was saying yesterday, it's not true. They have agreed, and they keep saying, we've agreed. They went, their spokesman, Al-Hayya, went on all Arabic television and said, we have agreed to this show because we feel that this is good for the debate. But it has, you know, it has the same elements, which, you know, has three stages, and each stage does this and so on and all that. So anyone that says that Hamas did not agree is basically either they don't know what they're talking about, or they purposely try to, you know, deflect the fact that they did that.
We actually have a clip of you asking Matt Miller about what incentive Hamas would have without a guarantee of a ceasefire. Let's take a look at that clip.
The Prime Minister of Israel keeps saying that There's no, he will not agree to any permanent ceasefire, that this war will go on. I ask, what incentive is there for Hamas or the militant groups to say, okay, I mean, we will give whatever leverage we have, and then, you know, they can come and so on. I'm just curious.
What incentive is there for Hamas? How about the well-being of the Palestinian people in Gaza? That ought to be an incentive. Good. Then that answers the question. That is the incentive.
Okay, maybe we have just
the incentive for Hamas is that an immediate ceasefire would help alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people. It would allow aid. It would make it easier for aid to get in. It would make it easier for aid to move to people in Gaza. It would allow people in Gaza to return to their homes and their neighborhoods and rebuild them. So. Yeah. I get your point about arguing about leverage, but let me finish. You will get your chance. The well-being of the people in Gaza that Hamas has always claimed they represent ought to be incentive enough for them to take this deal. I agree. Good.
But the prime minister is not committing himself to a ceasefire. He's saying that this war will continue. I'm saying that in the long run, he has the prerogative to continue this war, however they please, you know, go in, destroy, conquer, whatever, take hostages, you know, do all kinds of things in the future. I'm not defending or saying, I'm asking, exploring if the prime minister of Israel, if the cabinet in Israel is determined not to have a ceasefire, doesn't that make it less generous than people think it is?
So, no, I would not agree with that. First of all, as the secretary said yesterday, we're going to judge every entity in this conflict by their actions. Right. And the actions that Israel has shown in this negotiation process is making an offer for a ceasefire that, as I said, was a significant offer that answers a number of the demands that Hamas had said were prerequisites for them to agree to a deal. If Hamas really does care about the Palestinian people, they should agree to the deal, period.
Okay.
Hamas agreed to the deal. That's exactly the deal he was talking about, you know. And in fact, it took a lot of pressure probably on Hamas. Hamas is subject to a lot of pressure. There's the people who are facing starvation, people who are facing displacement, death and destruction every day and so on. And Hamas is not basically... and quite welcome in the neighborhood. I mean, we see that Egypt is closing its border. We see that Jordan actually, aids the United States of America and bringing down whatever rockets that may be attacking or missiles or whatever. So they do feel the pressure. The Palestinian Authority is not defending Hamas. So they feel all this pressure. And I think they said, okay, fine, we'll do it. We'll take a chance. If you keep saying that you do somehow, you will guarantee, if you will guarantee that this ceasefire can go on, then sure enough, we'll agree to it and we'll see. But of course, now we have seen some backtracking from the United States of America.
Saeed, you've been in Washington for a long time covering the State Department. How does this crop of State Department spokespeople compared to previous iterations when it comes to defending Israeli crimes and U.S. support for them?
That's a very good question. Because I tell you what, I've been around for a very, very long time. I think I go back to Margaret Tutwiler. I can't remember, but definitely Boucher. So, we have seen the intensity of the gobbledygook, that they respond to me with on most time, and the doublespeak and all that stuff, depending upon what is really going on. Whether it's for Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever issue that we may discuss, if I were to go back 20, 22 years, 21 years, whatever it is. So we have seen them. Now, the situation has never been as intense as it is now. U.S. complicity has never been so stark and so apparent as it is now in the genocide of the Palestinian people. So it is obvious that they will, their response will be equally intense in terms of either denying or defending Israel, defending everything that Israel does, basically repeating, repeating, parroting out what almost sometimes word for word what the Israelis do, whether it's, about mass rape, for instance, which is a debunked story, or about, decapitating babies, which is a debunked story, and so on, or, about a Shifa hospital. I mean, it's almost, there is absolutely no daylight between what is being said at the Ministry of War in Israel, the Ministry of Defense, or at the State Department, or, by John Kirby at the White House, and so on. So, yes, there is a difference in the words and in the intensity. I mean, there were times, I remember in 2014, the last major confrontation between the last major assault by Israel on Hamas in July, June, July, 2014. And we saw, at the time it was Jen Psaki was the spokesperson, and that we can see them that they go up with this thing, to be commensurate to what's going on at the time. So yes, they do change. We have seen that in this since the war began on Gaza, we have seen the State Department basically repeat almost word for word. Sometimes, they try to project that there is some sort of a daylight, but there isn't really. They repeat exactly what the Israelis are saying. And, but let me add another thing, Aaron. It's that what they do also is now they are quite selective in terms they deny certain reporters any the courtesy of a question and so on. I mean, we have colleagues and friends that are being denied to ask questions day after day. So that they are being quite selective. I must admit that they have called on me every day, which is good. I never take that for granted. But they ignored others. I mean, I don't want to name names, but they ignored many others that have very good issues to raise.
Going back to the question about the media kind of obfuscating the fact that Hamas agreed to the to releasing hostages. Let's take a look at how an analyst talked about this on Jake Tapper's show on CNN.
We have Hamas agreeing to something, maybe something proposed by Egypt and Qatar, although I'm not sure about that. And then Israel saying, wait a second, this is not the document that we've all been working with and the mediators in Cairo. So what exactly is going on?
We don't know.
Okay.
So we can speculate, right? And we're going to find out more in the next coming days. I mean, I think it's really good as part of that Gantz statement is that they're going to send some mediators to go to Egypt and engage with the negotiators to see kind of what is going on here. But what I suspect is going on is a little bit of several things. I mean, I think that Hamas is definitely seeing an opportunity here to turn themselves from being the bad guys for rejecting the proposal into the good guys for accepting the proposal and, it's Israel that's not, and putting Israel in a position where they really do need to move forward with this Rafah operation, in part because they see the military force as being the only leverage that they have against Hamas that has tunnels and hostages and time on their side.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is, it's Jake Tapper. I mean, what can I say? But also the respondent in this case, this is really, it's a stark exercise in hypocrisy and doublespeak. They were saying, in essence, we were hoping that Hamas would not agree. That's exactly what they were saying. You know, we do these things for theatric. We put these things together. And when we throw it, but gosh darn, Hamas agreed to it and they caught us red-handed, so to speak, with a proposal in our hand. So what is the proposal that Hamas agreed to that is different than what they said? Show us, what are the point by point, It is exactly what the Israeli lobby in this town has done every time and so on. Look what's happening with the demonstrations and so on. I spent a couple hours yesterday at the encampment at GW. Now, I didn't see any sign that says Jews go back to Poland. I didn't see any sign that says final solution or something like that. There's It's nonsense. It's a lot of BS. And it's just not there. I went there. I spent time. I talked to them, to the kids. And they're all saying, you know, free, free Palestine. I mean, those are the signs. And ceasefire now. There is no such thing. But what do you listen to on the news today? They bring in all these people. They quote the Jewish students as saying, you know, we felt threatened because that there were signs that said, go back to Poland, final solution, and all that. So it's the same kind of thing that we see in the, you know, this narrative about the students and so on. We see on Jake Tapper or Dana Bash and all these things. Quite honestly, I mean, I hate to say it, but the truth is, it's like they get their talking point from AIPAC, from ADL, or something like this. So, you know, it is definitely it's an exercise in disinformation. They are disinforming and so on. So in the end, it's the United States of America. You've been saying we want a ceasefire. We want a ceasefire. We want to free the hostages. Well, the truth is that the hostages are not going to be free except through negotiation. We've seen that in the last week of October, and it happened. Then the Israelis thought they were the smartest people in the world with the American help, that, you know, now what we can do, we can talk to these hostages that were freed. We can find out more information about where the others are and so on. So it is always, you know, the scheming, the planning behind it, and not really achieving the goals as they are stated.
I want to play a couple of clips from a so-called Holocaust remembrance ceremony that happened in Washington the other day. This was Joe Biden and Mike Johnson coming together to basically exploit the memory of the Holocaust to justify their support for Israel's mass murder campaign in Gaza. First, Biden spoke, and he tried to basically make this about some sort of old religious struggle, and particularly blame Hamas and Muslims for what he called an ancient desire to eliminate Jewish people. This is Joe Biden.
In 2023, on the sacred Jewish holiday, the terrorist group Hamas unleashed the deadliest day of the Jewish people since the Holocaust. Driven by ancient desire to wipe out the Jewish people off the face of the earth, over 1,200 innocent people, babies, parents, grandparents, slaughtered in their kibbutz, massacred.
So that's Joe Biden speaking at this ceremony. And then you had Mike Johnson, who was talking about the college campus protest, the Solidarity Campus for Gaza. And Mike Johnson invoked the memory of the Nazi Holocaust.
German universities like those at Strasbourg were at the heart of Renaissance and intellectual life. But it was at those same elite centers of learning where Jewish faculty and students were suddenly expelled, where anti-Jewish courses were introduced, and where professors performed horrific pseudoscience experiments on Jewish people brought from nearby concentration camps. We remember what happened then. And now today, we are witnessing American universities quickly becoming hostile places for Jewish students and faculty. The very campuses which were once the envy of the International Academy have succumbed to an anti-Semitic virus. Students who were known for producing academic papers are now known for stabbing their Jewish peers in the eyes with Palestinian flags. And with our survivors before us, if you close your eyes in the quietness of your own heart, you can almost hear the glass of Jewish storefronts shattered by stormtroopers. You could see fathers being executed at point blank in the ghettos. You can feel a brother's hand slipping out of his sister's as men in uniforms separate them into lines, and they can only mouth to one another, "Everything will be okay," hoping that it would be. You can hear screams coming from the gas chambers. And it's in these troubling times we must look to this audience, to the survivors of the Holocaust and their descendants, to help us remember and to bear witness.
I mean, so, you know, what Joe Biden says is abhorrent. He's trying to suggest, as you know, that Hamas and Palestinians are driven by some desire to eliminate Jews and as part of some ancestral hatred they have. And really, this is just about occupation. Then you have Mike Johnson, who says something even more unhinged, which is hard to fathom. Saeed, what is your response to hearing these comments?
Well, I mean, Mike Johnson is not a serious man. He's a clown. So I don't really don't want to sit there and comment about him talking about gas chambers and the students here and so on. So, you know, it is actually contemptuous, but it's also a cheap kind of a thing. I mean, he's obviously he's a good soldier for AIPAC. He received a lot of money from them, and they give him these things thinking that they could fool the public. The public today, Aaron, is really well aware. I mean, they know. I teach students and so on. They know quite a bit. They know what's going on. They go to social media. They're not going to be fooled about how the Palestinians are responsible for the Holocaust or for the rise of Nazism and so on. You remember Benjamin Netanyahu several years back, he said, actually, the Holocaust was the idea of Haj Amin al-Husseini, a Palestinian leader who went and whispered in Hitler's ear. He said, why don't you kill all the Jews and so on? That would be great for everybody. You remember that. So this is really, I mean, it's crazy. It's stupid and plays on, you know, the lack of knowledge or the disinformation that the public are listening to. What Biden says is far more dangerous now, because, you know, Biden is the man who sets policy. I mean, the decisions are with Biden, you know, so, and he's really, he holds the highest political mantle and he's the most powerful man in the world. I mean, he's the guy that can send in the F-35s and so on and 26 point something billion dollars to Israel to do whatever it does against the Palestinians under this pretext. The fact of the matter that Hamas did not come into being until December 1987. It was a result of the occupation, the brutality of that occupation. It had nothing to do with Nazism, with anything else. It is really, anti-Semitism is a Western problem. We don't bother with it. We don't talk about it. It doesn't, you know, it means, of course, I mean, my son-in-law is Jewish, my grandson is half Jewish. So it's not, I mean, of course, it's a despicable thing. But it's not something that the Palestinians ought to be burdened with. This is the white man's burden. That's their thing. They created it. You know, they have it. In Palestine, there was nothing ever remotely close to anti-Semitism. They lived in the villages and so on, and they were Palestinians. And they still do. I mean, they still, in Jebel Jerzim, or the Mount of Jerzim and so on, in the Nablus area, the communities that go back hundreds of years and so on. I don't know, maybe a lot longer. So when he says this, I mean, it is, he knows he is lying. He knows he's manipulating, but it is far more dangerous because it does carry a lot of weight. And he's going to do stuff under that name. And remember, Biden himself is not reluctant to lie. He lied about the decapitating of babies. He lied about the mass rape. So he has done this in the past. I think, you know, as people get more educated and know about the history, you know, they know that anti-Semitism is a dangerous thing. And the kind of vitiation that people like Johnson and the media and so on, when everything has become really anti-Semitic, if you say Free Palestine, it's anti-Semitic. I don't know how that, or the word intifada. I mean, he said the other day that word intifada is hurtful. Which, in fact, what it means is the shaking off. They don't understand what intifada means. It's the shaking off. You go like this, you know, and that's what intifada means. And people shaking off the shackles of occupation. It is germane to the occupied West Bank. Nowhere else. I mean, others have used it to connote uprising or something like this. But it's not our problem. It's not our issue. The Palestinian major issue is survival in their own homeland and finally becoming free and finally getting rid of this occupation that has gone on for too long.
You know, what I thought of when Mike Johnson was talking is that what he's describing is what we're seeing now in Palestine, like the executions that we're seeing. Right. People saying goodbye to their loved ones, people, you know, losing fathers, brothers, sisters. That was what was so ironic about what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, look, I am never one to compare. I mean, this is each sure. event in history like this has its own enormity. And it's a shame on the Europeans, shame on the Americans. They're the ones that are really should be held in contempt for allowing such a huge crime to take place under their eyes, you know, and so on. And it has continued and so on. And then we have seen also many examples of this kind of discrimination, this kind of racism that is inherent in European societies and in white American society and so on. We see it in the Civil War movements. We see it in the Jim Crow kind of deals. We see it. We saw it, you know, in supporting the South African apartheid regime. I mean, people tend to forget, but it was until George Herbert Walker Bush, the U.S. was defending apartheid, you know, so it wasn't that long ago. We know what this is. Palestinians know what it means to be, you know, stabbed and frisked and killed and so on. They know exactly what it means for the Israeli occupation army to bury people alive. I mean, this is the example that we are now uncovering and doing and all these things. They say, no. You know, so we know that it's someone like Gallant that says Palestinians are half human and kill them all. We know that it's people like Itzhak Herzog who went out and he says there are no civilians. They should all be wiped out. We're going to break the backbone of Palestinian society. Those were his words. So that they know, the world knows. I mean, as much as, you know, the APAC recipients of money like Mike Johnson or Tom Cotton or others try to, you know, to sort of distort the truth and fool the American public. The American public is really aware. You know, the fact that most of these people that are that get arrested are Jewish students, Catholic students, and non-Muslim students, or many non-Palestinian students, and so on. You know, it speaks for itself. They're not going to fool them for much longer. And I think that's why they are scared, by the way. They are panicky. They are panicky because suddenly people who were on the forefront of, let's say, the civil rights movement and defending women's rights, defending gay rights and so on. Now, some of them feel compelled to squash a free speech, the First Amendment and so on. And there's a great deal of panic in what we see. We've seen a tremendous change in the last 7 months. A tremendous change. You know, I remember back in November, and we saw a demonstration here in Washington that was at least 350,000 people. I'd never seen anything like this in my life. Then we saw a demonstration that was organized by the Israeli lobby and Israeli support organizations and so on, where, you know, all these politicians came and spoke and so on, you know, only a couple of weeks later, you know. So, and they had 50,000 despite the money spent, despite the organization, despite paying for people's expenses and so on. So things are really changing dramatically. I don't think that Jewish Americans can be fooled for much longer or can be blackmailed for much longer by, you know, the likes of AIPAC and others.
And what do you make of the bipartisan freak out over the college solidarity encampments? We've had the House come together and pass this insane bill, basically declaring that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism. You have the students constantly being smeared on corporate TV as being, you know, anti-Semites or all just outside agitators. There's a real fear in the establishment of these college encampments. What do you see so far as having been their impact?
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
Such a pleasure to talk to Saeed Erekat. The news from Palestine is so terrible, but he does such a great job speaking truth to power at these press briefings, and he's fearless. And I honestly can't believe they keep calling on him.
It's crazy to see because he's one of the rare cases in Washington where you see journalism being conducted and actually State Department spokespeople being held to account. Matt Lee of Associated Press is another one who actually does his job. It's a rare breed. And very grateful to Saeed Erekat for joining us and sharing his insight. Well, that's our show. Our website, as always, is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there, support us, get bonus content, and we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at usefulidiotspodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.
Useful Idiots.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.